Okay, we'll finish the session on the beaches of California. We'll transform to very close to the beaches where we grow strawberries. Now, this slide doesn't show you a lot of strawberries, but that's a huge crop for us. It's about $2 billion worth of production in the coastal California per year. This is how our fields look at the end of the season. 9 months prior to this, we fumigated them, and they look beautiful. But towards the end of the season, they look kind of organic, I call them, because nothing's going on there except natural forces of insects, pathogens, and weeds. One of the key issues we saw in the previous slide was the yellow nuts that just overshadows and takes over the production. It comes through plastic that we have on beds, and it establishes and is very competitive and aggressive. We have germinating nuts edge every week of the year, except maybe a Christmas break for about 2 weeks. So the tubers will produce multiple shoots, as you see here, and they just become a headache. You can't do anything with them during the season. In a plastic culture system like this, you can weed them because you have astronomical expenses for hand weeding. We also have soil-borne pathogens that proliferate towards the end of the season. This is a vascular wilt, fusarium wilt, Forma specialis fragaria, taking out the susceptible variety of strawberry, as you see here. So we typically do fumigate pre-plant, but this was a way of looking at end-season fumigation with methane products, MIDC-generating fumigants. The idea is to hit all those actively grown and producing populations of weeds and pathogens at the end of that cycle when everything is favorable for their development and the host is present and we're terminating the season anyway. So it is also twice cheaper than using chloropicrin, which we typically do in our production systems in conventional. The way we do these experiments, we'll take permeable bags like this and we'll put inoculum, whatever we like to look at, in different positions in this case in strawberry bed. This happened to be locally nuts edge tubers in these bags. So these tubers, they don't wait for too long. They germinate. If we put them in a treated check, we have good germination, about 60% in the first week, and all locations within the bed that we looked at. Here's the 30 gallons per acre KPAM. Now, first you see what happens at the drip tape that supplies the fumigant. We have very good control, both at 6 and 12 inches. As you move away from the drip tape, your efficacy decreases. We have survivorship here between the drip lines. This is a typical bed with 4 plant rows and 2 drip tapes. So we have survivorship here and here. We controlled a lot of nuts edge, but there's still about 80% germination in the first week, so we know we have surviving tubers in those systems with a KPAM. This is how they look. Healthy nuts edge, it germinates and grows right away. Within 7 days, you got to shoot. And those are the affected tubers without germination after KPAM application. You can also see it above ground. This is a typical bed. Yeah, there's some strawberry plants if you look closely, but the nuts edge that's been, mother plants have been grown above the tape that provides fumigants are yellowing already. And the centers where the tubers survived, well, the mother plants survived pretty well too. You can see they're still green. So that's showing that we don't get enough fumigant to be lethal to those locations in the bed. So this is the end of the season with VAPAM. It's a different project. We have in this study 3 tapes. So we're trying to improve the distribution horizontally. Again, looking for locations, and this is a contributed check. Very healthy nuts edge, not surprisingly, 80% germination in the first week, and all locations within the bed. So after the MITC product, we've seen the same thing. On the drip tape, we're doing a really good job. Both 6 and 12 inches, we move away from drip tape to the planting row, and we're losing this efficacy. It's still controlling some of it, but we still have germination about 14%. So is it good or bad? I think it's better than nothing. And what I think is valuable is if you cut those beds and look at the root systems and where the tubers of nuts edge are located, this is a profile at the end of the season. Not surprisingly, both strawberry, which is still trying to grow there somehow, and the nuts edge is taking over. They like to grow on the drip tape because it supplies water and fertilizer. A lot of them don't go very deep. Occasionally, you'll see about 5% of the tubers like this one go 8 to 10 inches, and occasionally we see a 12-inch depth tuber. But because we're being so consistently good around the drip tape supply fumigant, we're probably controlling most of this. Even though efficacy doesn't seem to be very good at first, because the concentration of our targets is around the riptide, we might be doing a pretty decent job with those inexpensive fumigation treatments. So what about fusarium? In a sand inoculum, when we have sand buried in those bags in different depths, we did a pretty good job. I was very impressed. We saw it in this study and several others we showed with different fumigants in different places. It's easy to control fusarium on all occasions when it's mixed with sand. So we have, in this case, Vapan, 50 gallons. That's an excellent job compared to the Czech. There is a problem there. It's a vascular pathogen. It doesn't live in the sand only. It lives in plant. It lives in the crown tissue inside of the plant. So we pick up infested crowns, and that goes both fusarium and other pathogens, and we bury them in those locations. The fumigants don't do good enough job. They don't penetrate deep enough into the crown tissue of the plant that's going to be disked around. And you can see that we have a little bit of control here, but we have very good survivorship rate and all rates in the infested crowns. So a pretty serious deal, because those crowns will get plowed into the soil, they harbor the pathogen, and they become a source of inoculum for the following planting. It's quite a problem. What we do is, on a small scale, we encourage people to go out and collect those infested plants, remove the crowns and the roots as much as possible if it's a small enough infestation to prevent it from getting bigger. I know it's been practiced in Israel and some other places in Europe, but it's a serious problem for us because we can't control them neither in organic systems nor in conventional, as you see here with fumigants. I'd like to acknowledge some growers that worked on this project in Plant Pathology Lab and UC Davis on that, and pointed out it's just one of the tools that we have in conventional systems. We obviously have varieties that have good tolerance or resistance to fusarium. There haven't been resistance to nutsedge yet, but we're looking at ways to control it in ways without fumigation with tarps that are thicker and don't allow penetration of nutsedge. We're looking at herbicides and how they fit in our production systems. We're looking at periodic flat fumigation with some accuracy to minimize the cost. And obviously, we're looking at how to produce fruit to avoid those problems. Both nutsedges, as you know, they like warm soil, and so do the pathogens. So if we can produce most of our fruit in the winter and try to avoid those periods as much as possible, and hopefully make some money before those problems take over and devastate our crop, that's definitely a scenario too. So we're looking at an IPM approach, and this is going to be a very inexpensive, I think, a useful tool for us as well. So if we look at it in big scale, we can use it hopefully in conjunction with other treatments as well. Well, that was a short story on that subject and put us back on schedule. Any questions or comments? Steve?
Has anybody tried to partition, you know, like you've got the old plants, the dead plants that are obviously full of inoculum. Has anybody tried to figure out, so the crop that comes the following year, a source of the pathogen, you know, is it like 50% from the soil and 50% from the dead plants? Or what's carrying the infection forward? I guess that's
yeah.
The question.
The question was how much of the pathogen is there from soil or from the infested crowns, or maybe even from the plants that come from the nursery, who knows? I don't think anybody looked at exact directly. We did look at the plant removal study. So in this case, we removed all the crowns. Unfortunately, the grower didn't do a very good job fumigating, so we had about 50% reduction in mortality in the following year. So we know we're removing part of it, maybe 50%, maybe 60%. It's hard to tell. But if we haven't quantified the amount of infection that happens from the soil inoculum versus the ones that comes out later from broken down crowns. So I'm sure both are very very important, but I think I argue that we have much better grasp in conventional systems, at least with fumigants, against the soils inoculum as opposed to what happens in the crowns. So it's an easier target to accomplish. Well, I guess that puts us at the end of this session. I thank all the speakers for staying on time and making the session good. So I'll appreciate all your time and attention to this, and thank you, and see you in the next sessions.